Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, I'm Fenway home. That's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts rocking.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball as well as MLB Wide Hot Stove. For everyone staying up late tonight on Periscope, as usual, you can find the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and literally everywhere. Anywhere you listen to any type of media, music, podcasts, we are available. Joining me, as always, Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good, Terry.
Good. So another week down before pitchers and catchers anyway. Not a whole lot going on with the Red Sox. Whole hell of a lot going on with the Yankees. Adam Ottavino today signed to a 3-year, $27 million deal. So similar to what Joe Kelly got, and his average annual salary is basically right on par with the Kelvin Herrera, Juris Familias, and add that to the Zach Britton deal, and they're looking pretty good.
Whatever that guy's name is moves the needle zero for me. He's 33 years old. He's had one good season. To me, it's a significant overpay for a guy with one good season. Doesn't move the needle for me at all for another reason, which is it still does not address their concern or my concern for them, which is their starting rotation. They're dangerously thin. They don't have. I think Severino is an elite ace, but he went through the second half of last year where he was less than that. Sabathia, at this point, you just don't know what you're going to get from him in terms of health and production. So to me, I mean, I guess if I had to be worried about anything, it's that player could have been a fit for the Red Sox at a shorter length of deal and less dollars, because that contract to me seems outrageous for a guy with no track record at 33 years old.
Yeah, I don't have his numbers up in front of me right now, but he did have a pretty solid year last year with Colorado and, you know, was a big part of what helped get them into the wild card game and then ultimately the NLDS. But you kind of touched on it for me right there towards the end. It's not so much what it does for the Yankees. It's what it doesn't do for the Red Sox. You know, our bullpen right now is pretty bad. And I got some numbers here. let's see, Ryan Brazier in 2 months last year, you know, August, September, 1.60 ERA. That looks fantastic, but it's a short sample size. Matt Barnes, going month to month here, I have his monthly ERAs in April, 3.24. Not too bad. If he were to be a closer, you would probably want that a little lower. Probably more like his May numbers, which was a 2.13 ERA, June 3.09, and July, he was probably the best month of his career, 1.46 ERA. But keep in mind, we did have a weak schedule that month. I think we only lost 4 or 5 games overall. None of those teams were above 500 until the very last series against the Phillies. So those first 4 months look really good. That 1.46 ERA in July, suddenly he fell off a massive cliff, a 9.64 ERA in the month of August, and that's with 10 appearances. And then finally in September, nobody was really good out of the bullpen other than maybe Brazier. And Barnes was a 5.06 ERA. Is this a guy you want to mortgage your season on, assuming there's no more signings?
I'm sorry, who was the player?
That was Matt Barnes.
Oh, no. I like Matt Barnes. I don't love Matt Barnes. I don't love him on the road. His road home splits are like hard to believe. And I think his use in the 2017 playoff run is an indication how the Red Sox feel about him, where they went with that rover position where basically the next day's starter pitched the eighth inning as like a bullpen instead of his bullpen. So the Red Sox, by their conduct, showed that they didn't have any faith in him. But that's not my concern. And we talked about this, I think, two recordings ago, where they're so deep in the starting rotation with major league guys that are out of options that it makes sense that those guys are going to filter into bullpen roles. I read an article, one of the reasons why I missed the end of your comment, and I apologize for that. Felger and Maz do a bit that's called When the Hosts Aren't Listening. And I just got popped on that for not listening to the end of your comment, and I apologize for that. But what I was reading or reviewing was that Joe Kelly and Craig Kimbrell combined for 128 innings last season. That's a ton of innings for two guys. Guys, you know, and there's certainly some bad innings in there, especially for Joe Kelly. But here's where I think those innings are going to come. One, Barnes, Brazier, Hembree, and then to some certain extent, Bobby Pointer, Stephen Wright, and Brandon Workman were there. Those guys are going to be there. One guy I forgot to mention last week or last recording when we talked about it, Brian Johnson. I think he, as a left-handed guy and a long role, a long relief role, I think he has an ability to eat innings. This article I'm referencing discusses Hector Velasquez, who I love because he's an elite strike thrower, not a strikeout guy. Can't bring him in, you know, you just cannot bring him in with, you know, man on third, no outs, you know, cause he's not going to strike out people with any consistency. Somebody I don't know much about, Colton Brewer, is also mentioned. And then the other person who makes me almost a little bit sick to my stomach is Tyler Thornburg. Guy sucks, can't get healthy, doesn't seem to pitch with, you know, he doesn't have that thing that, you know, that's sweat, and maybe it's swagger, maybe it's balls, I don't know. I don't like the arm. I don't like that he can't get healthy. I don't like that he can't. I mean, he got absolutely shelled last year. So do I think that's going to be the bullpen by August 1st? No, I don't. I think they're going to have to go out and get better. They're going to be in it, and they're going to have to improve. For whatever reason, they don't want to do it now. They want to wait. I do think there's a chance that Kimbrell comes back. And if that's the case, then I'm a little less concerned. But this is easily the biggest weakness for the Boston Red Sox entering 2019. It's not even close. The lineup's awesome. The starting rotation's awesome. It's deep. It's got multiple Cy Young Award winners in it. You got a guy, Chris Sale, who hasn't won one, who could easily win one. There are some health concerns, but again, they're really deep. So if you're going to look at this roster and this team and go, okay, if 2019 doesn't work out, why? And I think anyone with a brain is going to look at this and go, well, the bullpen's got it was our weakest point last year and we overcame it, and it's gotten significantly worse since. So that's where I'm at now with Barnes. I don't expect anything better from Barnes than what we've gotten, which is he'll be the eighth inning guy in the regular season. He'll have a week or two where he stops throwing strikes. And he'll come in with the bases loaded, no out, get two strikeouts and a pop-up and get out of it and go, oh, my God, he's got that good of stuff. And he'll be everywhere in between. And I don't expect anything different from him. You can't rely on him as your closer. You can't rely on him consistently throughout the year. And that's why I think they're either going to get some power arms, multiple, by the trade deadline, or they're going to go get the closer on one of the worst teams that's going to be out of it by July.
There's a lot to unpack with you. You were pretty thorough there. I'm just going to focus on a couple of things here. Hector Velasquez, I was a little surprised to see his numbers aren't that great in a couple different areas. He did have a 3.18 ERA, which looks very serviceable. His whip was astronomical. Walks and hits per inning, 1.44. His strikeout per nine, as you kind of mentioned, he's not really a strikeout guy, only 5.6. Matt Barnes is 14.0 strikeouts per nine. So strikes out almost triple the guys. And then to go along with his whip, he gives up 10.3 hits per nine innings. So not a guy I'd be overly comfortable with, certainly in high leverage situations. And when I look at this bullpen as a whole, you can make the case you don't have an eighth or a ninth inning guy presently, not a bona fide one. You know, when you're looking at teams like the Yankees, they got Chapman, Britton, Betances, Ottavino. That's their top four relievers, and our best reliever would be their number five, in my opinion. And I'm just, the other problem I'm having here is, how do you keep going to this current cast of bullpen guys when Erod can't get out of the fifth inning? Eovaldi's not going to get out of the fifth inning a lot of the time against good contact hitting teams. He throws a ton of strikes and gets hit. And you can see that with Porcello at times. And then I don't want to open up the Chris Sale can of worms here, but you know, if he's not healthy, he's not going to be going six or seven innings. So I'm pretty gravely concerned with this bullpen, and I think a bad bullpen could sink us.
All right, well, with Hector Velasquez, what I like about him is he's a Swiss Army knife, and he seems pretty selfless. He was put in some really difficult spots where he started games, you know, like it seemed like that day they made a switch, whether it was they had to skip Sale a couple of times or whatever the reason. He always jumped in that role, and I've never heard a negative thing about him as far as his ability to go out there and try to get people out, regardless of what situation he's put in, whether it would be considered fair or not by the fan base. I agree with you. The Yankees bullpen is significantly better than the Red Sox bullpen. It was last year. Didn't matter. On Ottavino, I don't think he that move to me doesn't move the needle. It just doesn't. I'm sorry. Now, I could be wrong. I could be wrong for 1 year, 2 years, all 3 years of that deal, and it could turn out to be a good deal. Very well could be. I just, for me, right, sitting right here, a guy with one elite year at 33, that contract, he'll be the last year of that deal, he'll be pitching at age 36. going from Colorado to New York. And I don't think he's going to fail, and I don't necessarily think he's going to be a great success. I don't know. And his track record personally just doesn't bother me. And then, you know, the Yankees' weakness in their starting rotation, their complete and utter lack of depth, is a much bigger issue than their bullpen to me. They're going to hit. They're going to slug. They're going to strike out a ton. They're going to win 10-3 games at Yankee Stadium. I don't care about that, because I think at the end of the day, both the Red Sox and the Yankees will be in it in September, and it's going to come down to what team is the most well-rounded. And what is, by the way, easier to fix? The assets you need to get relievers are less, and I think the Red Sox will address the reliever situation as teams are out of it by June, July, and August. So I do strongly believe that at the end of the day, what the bullpen looks like in late March and early April is going to be significantly different, assuming we're in it to win it again in September. I think it's the bullpen is the easiest thing to address at the trade deadline. It takes the least amount of resources to get bullpen help as compared to maybe a power bat or a power arm for the starting rotation. On the flip side, assuming that at least the Yankees in the division are the biggest hurdle, they're going to have a harder time filling their issues. Not to make this like the Yankees are the only thing we have to get across, because obviously the Astros are going to be awesome. I think the Indians are still going to be really good. The Rays have had the double Rays have really had a just a really sound offseason with really, in my opinion, smart, sound baseball decisions, signings. And they won 90 games last year, and I think they're better. So I'm not saying that it's just Red Sox Yankees, but at the end of the day, most of the time, that's how the path through the division goes. And I'd still take the way the Red Sox are assembled over the New York Yankees at this point.
You're softening on the Rays, because you did say the Rays and then corrected yourself to the Devil Rays. I just want to point out.
I wouldn't call that a softening.
Okay.
I would call that a momentary slip.
All right.
But no, it's the double race.
Okay. I got Adam Ottavino's numbers up here, and I'm not familiar with him very much either. He spent basically his whole career with the Rockies, and, they haven't been a playoff team up until this past year, and basically a West Coast team. But his numbers are better than you might think. 2013 in 51 appearances, 2.64 ERA. 2014 in 75 appearances, he had a 3.60. Must have been injured in 2015, because there's only 10 appearances there. He had a 0.00 ERA, so that's kind of weird, especially if he was hurt, but whatever. 2016, 34 appearances, 2.67 ERA. 2017, not a good year at all, 63 appearances, 5.06 ERA. And then last year, pretty solid, 2.43 ERA in 75 appearances. So maybe he was never really a high leverage guy, throughout most of that. I know going into last year, they added Jake McGee, Brian Shaw, who was a part of that 2016 Cleveland bullpen, and I think they had one more. It escapes me. But all of them fell flat, and their bullpen was terrible, and Ottavino was the only bright spot throughout the year. So, again, it's not that it improves the Yankees a whole lot, because it doesn't. They still do have Chapman, Britton, Betances, and even Chad Green is a really formidable reliever. He'd be one of the better Red Sox relievers, with our current bullpen. But it just would have been nice to have a guy like Ottavino to, you know, to slot in there. And I don't know if he would have been a closer. I don't know if he would have been brought in for higher leverage like Cora had initially hoped to do with Kimbrel. But, you know, it just, it really sucks. Here's a...
Hold on. You would want Ottavino on at a 3-year, $9 million per $27 million contract like the Yankees just gave him?
Well, I'd probably be more comfortable at 2, to be honest with you. But, I mean, I'd be more comfortable...
He just got 3, so that's the market. So if you're upset that they didn't get him, it's got to be because they're not willing to go to the neighborhood that the Yankees did. I mean, you know, to me... And again, I just briefly, because I don't want to harp on the same thing. 1 year, no track record, 33 years old. Like, I'm sorry, if the market was 3 years, $9 million, what I would say is re-sign Joe Kelly, make a play for Britain. To me, Ottavino is not in that class of player.
Well, I don't like the Kelly comparison in there. You know, he's... I mean, Ottavino's certainly not going to be 2017 Craig Kimbrel. Like, I'll agree with that 100%. But Kelly is just so up and down and just fucking loses it, you know, for weeks or months at a time. And, I mean, other than 2017, he's been below – he hasn't posted an ERA higher than 3.60. So, I got to lean on the numbers there. And at 33 years old, I don't know what his arsenal is. I don't know if he's probably not a fastball guy. I don't think he's blowing anyone away, you know, at 33. But his stuff must play, and the Yankees were comfortable enough. The Yankees didn't have to give him a 3-year deal. You know, they didn't need him. Their bullpen was fine, especially compared to ours. So. You know, I wish I had the full scouting report on him, but, you know, I would have, at this point, I would have taken him, even if he was only really good for 2 of those years. You know, but to be honest with you, I put this tweet out earlier, so we'll get into it. I do have one more scenario that I want to get to after, before we, you know, move away from it. But here's what... Everyone cost, all the real notable guys. Zach Britton, 3 years, $39 million. Juris Familia, 3 years, $30 million. We just went through Ottavino, 3 years, $27 million. David Robertson, 2 years, $24 million. Andrew Miller, 2 years, $24 million. Kelvin Herrera, the guy I wanted, kind of covered the last show, 2 years, $18 million. The reason why a lot of those guys are so affordable is because it's a saturated market. If, say, only Britton and Familia were, say, those were the only two notable guys and it was just kind of a, you know, a shallower market for this offseason, those guys would have gotten, those would probably be 50-something million-dollar contracts. But because it was such a saturated market, nobody had to go crazy. And that's why it's, you know, January 17th, whatever today's date is, and you know, Adam Ottavino gets signed relatively cheap, you know, and Herrera a week or two ago. So this was the year. Even if we couldn't afford it this year, we're going to be in a different position next season, you know, after this season, I should say, when a bunch of money comes off the books, and then we at least would have been set. So, you know, the bigger picture isn't exactly only 2019. It's, you know, it's a year or two beyond that. And I just can't believe we just laid there like a dead fish. And
well, again, I have two comments and then one just briefly because I've already touched on it. The rotation is going to have Wright, Erod, Velasquez, Brian Johnson, those guys, only one of those guys, likely Erod, will be in the rotation. The rest of those guys are going to be in the bullpen, and they weren't there last year. So that's number one. Number two, one thing you could do, and I don't know if we've touched on this, go sign another starter. Go spend some money on Keuchel. Let Porcello play out the balance of his year. He's a proven guy. Again, you're reloading trying to win another World Series. So get Keuchel, have Porcello be your fifth starter, and then that puts Erod into the bullpen where you know, he can unload a little better with his fastball, knowing he only has to throw 15 or 25 pitches. He's a lefty. He showed in the playoffs some willingness to pitch in different roles, and I don't know if that's going to extend to the regular season, but I think it would. I mean, that's another option. Now, with that said, and I'm just going to get ahead of your commentary where you're just like itching to get at me with what I've said here. Well, Jeremy, those one aren't proven bullpen guys, and Terry, I agree with you. But they are proven major league arms, and I think the odds of more than one of them being a serviceable reliever until such point as we can go out and get someone in the trade market, I think that possibility is a pretty good. I think it's an option that gets you 10, 15 games over 500 on July 15, because you're just so good everywhere else.
You sort of, you know, with your Erod thing, kind of branched off from where I was about to go. Let me say with Keiko, I was a big proponent of that because you could either trade Porcello or you're essentially replacing him after this year with his contract. And I haven't heard his name in days or weeks, like, which is crazy because he was one of the top starters anyway. But anyway, with that aside, here's a scenario. What if Eovaldi goes to the bullpen? I mean, he's getting elite closer money. That's what his contract really breaks down as. You know, he's getting $17 million a year for 4 years. And I just don't know if, given the state of our bullpen, that maybe that's where his value is. And then maybe Velasquez becomes your five starter or Brian Johnson. And to tell you the truth, I would almost prefer Johnson because I don't think his stuff plays very well for a bullpen type role. Even if he comes in with a clean inning, Wright is funky, but for whatever reason, I trust him more. And I know that he can handle the moment. I don't know that with Brian Johnson, so he might be a good starter. Here's another thing to build on to that, and then you can comment. What if instead of having a five starter, we just tinker with the opener idea, and then you bring in like a Johnson or a Velasquez. I don't know. Maybe Hembree would be a good candidate to pitch an inning or two. Off the top of my head, I can't really. Or maybe Workman actually would be a good candidate for that. But those are just some other ideas. And if you can have an Eovaldi-type guy in the pen, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's worth it to have him available for 3 or 4 days a week as opposed to one start for 4 or 5, and if we're really lucky, 6 innings.
All right. So on Eovaldi, the podcast we did after he signed, I made the point. My initial thought when I saw the news come across was, well, that's a closer's contract. That's closer's money. I mean, that's what Chapman's making. The elite guys from 2 or 3 years ago when that closer market went crazy. It was in line. Now, that could be by some coincidence. I mean, we've talked about the reasons why Eovaldi was a little bit, his contract was a little bit more favorable, you know, health issues, two Tommy Johns. His market really exploded as a result of the playoff run. Meanwhile, he still had his struggles in the regular season. But I did say that at the time. I said, man, that's oddly looks like a closer's contract. Now, I don't disagree with you. I think they'll start the season with him as a starter because it's just easier to have a guy stretched out and then shorten him to a single inning appearances versus having start as a single inning guy. And then, you know, normally you wouldn't do it at the major league level. Normally you'd send him down to the minors for a month to extend out to 75, 90 pitches. So it's just easier to shrink the pinch count than grow it, especially in the middle of the season. And for that reason, I do think Eovaldi's going to start as a starting pitcher. The contract, the skill set, it wouldn't surprise me if we get to May 1st and we're hemorrhaging games because our bullpen sucks. Would it surprise me in the least bit that Eovaldi would be willing to go and be and fix that problem? Absolutely not. He showed it in the playoffs by everything he said, even after he signed the contract. He seems to be a modern-day professional athlete without the modern-day ego. It's one of the reasons why I really, really root for him to succeed, and I really like him. Brian Johnson, I agree with you that Brian Johnson scares me. He's a little bit like Vasquez. So Brian Johnson's a lefty. Vasquez is a righty. Vasquez is a sinker ball, ground ball guy. Vasquez can be a really good strike thrower. Brian Johnson lives about 87 to 89 when he's really loose on a warm day. He relies so heavily on location. And one thing with watching Brian Johnson pitch, you know right away if he doesn't have it because his location's not pinpoint. If he's missing in the middle of the plate, duck, because it's going to be batting practice. And he battles and he fights, and I do think he's a competitor. But he doesn't have – again, you're just putting another guy in the bullpen that can't come in with a guy on third because he can't get a strikeout. So I don't disagree with you on Brian Johnson. But there are 8 starting pitchers, and I like the idea of adding someone like Keuchel because, one, you don't have to pay him elite starter money. I really don't. I think the Porcello contract from 3 years ago is a good barometer of what I think you could get Keuchel for. I am totally baffled at this point why he's not signed. I predicted when we did the prediction show right after the World Series, I did say that Keuchel seemed to be a fit for me in New York. There's been no news linking Keuchel to the Yankees. Again, they're signing guys like Ottavino, which may or may not be a good signing, and they pursued Machado at least for a period of time. Meanwhile, Keuchel's sitting out there, seems to be a fit, seems to be the type of personality that could pitch in a big market like New York, yet it seems like for whatever reason there's just no interest, and I don't understand that. I just don't. But I wouldn't mind that benefiting the Red Sox if maybe they could get him at a contract similar to Eovaldi's. And then you have – I mean, you're already deep. Now you're deeper. You push Porcello to the fifth spot. Keuchel's a proven guy. He's won a Cy Young. And then you have zero risk of having to sign Porcello next year to keep things intact. You could let Porcello walk. You know you're going to get him at his best this year because he's in a contract year. So he's going to pitch. He's going to pitch. He's going to want to win. He's going to want to be productive. And then you have Keuchel there ready-made for the next 3 years after Porcello's gone. To me, it makes some sense, especially if you can save some money because the market seems to be shrinking.
I would love that deal. You know, I've always liked him. And, I mean, he pitched a one-game wild card in New York in 2015, won that game. That was a Cy Young year. Season guy, I don't think – his numbers are terrible at Boston, and that's an argument that, you know, the detractors of bringing him here will quickly point out. But it's a small sample size, and I think he can handle it, and, I'd love to see it. But, unfortunately, I don't think he's, going to be, landing with us or even the Yankees. And I think, aside from maybe some durability issues, I think Paxton and Keuchel is kind of a push. I think Paxton basically pitches to Keuchel's level, but I would probably trust Keuchel's durability a little bit more. But, they went that way. I think the Yankees fucked up by getting Paxton when they probably could have just waited a little while and maybe got Kluber, by just adding one more top 10 prospect to that package. And that would have been scary. That would have been an instant game changer, I would think.
Well, as we sit here right now, I still think the Red Sox are the better team. Do they have basically the same weakness they had last year? Yes. At the end of the day, are they still going to be the favorites or co-favorites along with probably the Astros? Yeah. And by the way, the Astros haven't – and you're probably already getting ready to respond to this. I don't remember off the top of my head – that the Astros have gotten significantly better. They signed who's the guy they signed, I think, from Cleveland. They signed a bat. I like that deal. I'm of course not remembering the details this second, but that seemed like a smart move to me. But they haven't gotten any better. They haven't addressed the fact that they haven't. Charlie Morton is like 36. Verlander's like 37. Keuchel's not under control. He's an unrestricted free agent. They've got some issues in Houston, and so I still like the Red Sox where they are. I really wish that they could get either Kimbrel, or if they have to make a trade, using a guy like Porcello or somebody to bring back an arm for the bullpen to round out the roster, that would make me feel a lot better. The other thing I want to mention just quickly, and then I'll let you change topics, Terry. Dombrowski sucks at building a bullpen. I mean, he sucks. He missed on, and I've already mentioned this guy, although I'm going to space it right this second, because of course, Thornburg. He spaced it on Thornburg, who's the guy who threw out his arm, who blew out his AC joint, throwing his glove after getting pulled they spent assets on that guy. He sucks. He couldn't pitch. He couldn't stay healthy. And then he ultimately blows out his arm, throwing his glove like a crybaby. Carson Smith. Yeah. Thank you for that, Terry. He has not really made sound player personnel decisions with the bullpen. And so I have some concerns just moving forward generally as Dombrowski is the president of baseball operations with his ability to build a bullpen. Now, if he goes and trades an asset, let's say he takes somebody like Wright, and there's really no spot for Wright. He's a tweener. You can never trust a knuckleballer, but there's someone out there that values him. And I say, look, I'll give you a prospect and a reliever. Do you trust that Dombrowski's going to pick the right reliever and get a guy that's going to come in here and actually be a positive effect player on this roster?
Not really.
Right? I mean, I think anybody that watches this team that understands what Dombrowski is, his strengths and his weaknesses, can understand that he really is just, for whatever reason, you know, it's like Belichick's inability to draft receivers in the second round. Like every time he drafts a receiver, they're just like an automatic bust. Dombrowski has like a brain fart with the bullpen. He just can't figure it out. And I don't understand why that is. I also don't understand why the Red Sox organizationally can't get someone that can help him with that talent evaluation, because it's got to get better for the long-term health of and the continued competitive seasons from the Boston Red Sox.
Well, just think back. I mean, when was there a season where we were this thin? I don't remember. I mean, there might be seasons where we've wanted to add one arm, but I just don't recall.
The closer by committee season was really bad, and that was a goddamn nightmare. And that's what this is shaping up to be. Now, maybe they project I'm sorry, but if I hear Dombrowski tell me that Barnes is going to be the closer, like, I'll be looking for a tall building.
Well, that's what he said.
And a breezy day. Brazier closed in AAA. Brazier, to me, has the sort of sensibility and the personality and, by the way, the ability to throw strikes that attract me to him, as far as maybe – and he's not going to be an elite guy, but maybe he can get you through certain points of the season until a point where you actually have to address it. I hearken back to his first playoff appearance. He sucked. He really, really sucked. He couldn't throw strikes. Nerves clearly got the best of him. We did a podcast that night. I said, basically, what the fuck? This guy just shit his pants and he's done. We can't rely on him. Well, guess what? They rolled him out there the next day, and I think he got three outs on like eight pitches.
Yeah,
and then he was really good throughout the run, and he was really good in the regular season. I, again, no track record. Pitched in Japan 2 years ago. You know, was a closer at AAA. How much does that matter in the big league club? So I don't rule out Brazier as a plus player in that bullpen, but again, no track record. And this is a team that has World Series aspirations. and you're rolling out a guy who was in Japan 2 years ago in a key spot in the bullpen, it just doesn't make too much sense to me.
Yeah, and I mean, if he's duplicating what he did last year, and you know we're in mid-June and we're comfortable with him, then fine. But it's just sitting here right now in January, it's a huge risk, and I like him. And in that second Yankee start where he settled down and pitched well, I think that was also the appearance where he told Gary Sanchez to get in the fucking box. And so, you know, he kind of endeared himself a little bit to the fan base even more with that. But it just makes me nervous. But let's get to the next topic here. And it kind of ties in with...
Before you do that, I just happened to go to Keuchel's Twitter account. Somebody tweeted right after Ottavino signed today, so 3:45 today. Somebody tweeted, Yankees now need to sign Keuchel, his Twitter handle. He has a 3.66 career ERA. He's won a World Series and won a Cy Young. And this to me is very, very interesting. Keuchel retweets it and says, that doesn't mean anything anymore, ... apparently.
He's getting frustrated, you know, by
He's getting frustrated
there.
By the lack of market. And I like it. I love it. Feed me your tears, Keuchel, and take a good deal with the Red Sox, please. Please, Red Sox, jump into the fray here. Please, I'm begging you.
Like I said, I'd love to see it. If we don't get him, and I mean, I think there's a 98% chance we won't. I hope he ends up being a Brewer and takes like a Grandal type contract and just kind of latches on with them to see if they can go for it, because the NL Central is wide open right now. It's hard. I mean, the Cubs, I mean, I guess you have to make them the front runner, but the Cardinals aren't too far behind, and I don't think the Brewers are too far behind, and I don't know. I like that team. But anyway, kind of shifting a little bit, I went through the bullpen arms that have signed this year, and I think we can agree that literally all of them are affordable. Zach Britton, 3 years, $39 million. That's the biggest contract so far of this offseason. And then you had Herrera, you know, the cheapest of them all, 2 years, $18 million. So they were all affordable contracts. Now, let's kind of look at the fiscal part of it now. If we can't afford them presently, how are we going to do it with a potentially 10-year, $350 million contract for Mookie Betts? Because everybody thinks it's a foregone conclusion. We're definitely going to sign him. But this is the problem we're going to have. We're going to sign him, and then we're going to have a team, you know, full of holes. And because we're not addressing them now while Mookie's a $20 million player.
Yeah. I think part of the inability to pay for the relievers, or the decision not to pay, because you're the Red Sox, you have the ability. The decision not to pay for the relievers is not tied into Mookie. It's tied into Bogarts, Bradley, Sale, Benintendi, who we talked about on the last podcast as being a candidate for an early extension. To me, I don't think the Red Sox have any hope of signing Betts. I have zero hope. Like, I put it at less than a 5% chance. And there are two reasons why I think he ends up being a Red Sox past the next two seasons. Number one, and I don't root for this, I never root for injuries unless your name is LeBron James, Peyton Manning, or Manny Machado. I don't root for player injuries. There may be a few others out there, but you get my point. If Betts has a downturn in production because of injury, where his value drops, that's one way you could sign him. So injury or production drop, which let's be honest with ourselves here. This guy hurt his oblique. That is an injury that can derail people's seasons. He won an MVP in a season he had an oblique injury and went on the DL. So I mean, he's so fucking athletic that he recovers from injuries like – he's, and I can't say enough positive things about Mookie Betts. The other reason would be that he somehow feels a connection with the Red Sox and takes a discount. If he was inclined to do the discount route, he would have had more substantive discussions last year when they approached him about an early extension. He basically responded with, I'm going to go maximize my arbitration years and then go to unrestricted free agency and get a massive deal. So he's already kind of shown that that second option's not available. I don't want him to have a downturn because I would much rather win another World Series, get another MVP year out of him or two, and then let him go make his money. And honestly, at that point, I won't be upset about losing Mookie Betts because he's been an absolute star for this market. He's given me and the Boston Red Sox fan base the ability to watch one of the best, most one of the better generational talents we may ever even see again. He's an NBA point guard athletically playing right field. So I love him. I love the player. I don't see a downturn in production. I don't see injuries, and I don't see a hometown discount. So sit down, fans. Okay, Mookie Betts is not going to be a Boston Red Sox in 2021. Less than 5% chance. I mean, something would have to go haywire. The Red Sox, and here's the other thing. I don't want Mookie Betts at $30 million a year because you absolutely eviscerate your opportunity to balance out your roster by signing one guy for that amount of money.
I'm with you 100%. I don't like the present situation. And
Wait. You're with me 100%?
I guess.
All right, I'm changing my mind.
Okay.
So, no.
Yeah, I mean, it just, those types of contracts just really weigh down a team. And I'm okay with doing it in the rotation. Like, I hate David Price, but as much as I hate him, that contract's starting to work out very well. And we probably don't win the World Series without him. And I'd much rather take another $30 million, and I'm not sure if Bumgarner's the guy. I mean, I certainly wouldn't complain, but you know, I would sign another 30-ish year old player with a record of durability, and you know, and spend it that way than do it with a bat. You know, it's impossible to replace Mookie Betts, you know, with one player, but you might be able to do it with a couple of players, you know, and balance it out. Look at the 2013 team. Not one player on that team, and that wasn't that long ago, not one player on that team made more than, I think it was like $17.5 million. John Lackey was the highest paid player on that roster that year. And that might be hard to duplicate again, but that's just one example of a team that was incredibly balanced all the way around. Decent bullpen, decent rotation, and we were still the number one offense in the league that year. So, you know, when you see teams just passing on Bryce Harper, passing on Manny Machado, you know, their market is down to just two or three teams apiece, and the Phillies are in on both of them. So, you know, it's probably three or four teams total, you know, involved with those guys, and everybody else is passing on it. And a lot of good teams, you know, the Astros, like you kind of pointed out in the last segment, they're not in on so many guys, and, you know, they're fine with it. You know, there, so many teams are just content to let it ride, and I get it. I think teams are getting smarter. Another interesting thing here is, and I haven't read too much into it, so I can't really go too deep into it on this episode, but I would like to before the season starts. The collective bargaining agreement ends at the end of the 2021 season, and there's a lot of frustration right now with the union on how the free agent market is going, and there's rumblings of a strike, possibly. And the interesting thing about the timing of that is Mookie Betts is a free agent the year before. So that could be fortunate for the Red Sox if you're clinging to the small hope that there is going to be a discount or maybe just a shorter term deal with higher annual value. I mean, I'd give Mookie 5 years at a, you know, at 35 to 40 million. I just wouldn't want to, you know, once you get past seven, there's a ton of risk. But so I'm just wondering how that offseason will go. And he's going to be up against Mike Trout. So they're going to be the big two for that offseason. And then if that doesn't I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if that doesn't go well, that could be the final straw that kind of pushes the league into a strike.
Trout's going to Philadelphia. Mookie, if he's never going to take a 5-year deal. Okay, he's not.
Right.
Why would he? He's transcendental. I mean, that, and I might have just made up a word there, taken two parts of a word and combined them into a non-word. But he's a generational talent, and by generational, I mean like name someone more athletic, more capable in all phases of a position player's game than Mookie Betts. I mean, he's as good as Mike Trout in almost every category, and then stack on like another 30% more athleticism. It's crazy. And if he stays a Red Sox beyond his final arbitration year, which is 2020, it's because of that potential strike or the potential collective bargaining issues. And I'm going to tell you what he'll do. He'll go say, look, you want me? It's 1 year, $50 million. And he'll keep that flexibility, and he'll then let the collective bargaining issue play itself out. And then, because he's already gambled on himself, he's already won. He's shown that he's willing to go into a season on 1 year deals and risk it all. So the guy is like fearless. And so I envision that scenario where he's never going to take a 5-year deal. He'll take the 1 year and he'll ask for some crazy amount of money and he'll get it. And especially if the Red Sox are competitive and they see Mookie Betts as a piece towards potentially another World Series, they'll probably pay it. And the collective bargaining issue will play itself out, and he's going to get a 10-year deal for $350 million. And I don't want him at that amount of money. I don't want anybody at that amount of money. Now, I want Mookie Betts. So everyone, oh my God, how could you not want Mookie Betts? No, that's not what I'm saying. I want Mookie Betts. But it's like, I want an 80-inch OLED TV, but I don't want to pay 10 grand for it. You know? I mean, right? It's like, yeah, so I'm going to buy the 65-inch Sony that's $2,500 because, you know, it fills a need, and I can keep the money in my pocket to grocery shop or whatever else thing I need to do. And I know it's a really cheap, lazy analogy, but I'm trying to make my point where you've got other things you've got to worry about. You've got to continue to Boston. You're the Boston Red Sox. I mean, you like the Bruins are in it, the Celtics are in it, the Patriots are the Patriots. And don't think that these teams don't go, we can't be the team that struggles. We can't in this climate, in this city. We can't be that team. The interest will fall off. There's too many other winners around us right now. We have to be competitive. And if you understand that, and the Red Sox do, there's no question that they do, they have to understand that they need to have well-rounded, balanced rosters to be competitive year in and year out to keep the support of the baseball community in Boston, or the sports community in Boston. And so for that reason, look, Mookie's gone, guys. He's gone. It's not even, to me, if I wasn't on this podcast, I wouldn't even carry on the conversation. He's history. And I'll tell you right now, like Brady here at the end of the year, you know, it's kind of limited and you may only see him for two. I'm going to enjoy every single at bat I can see Mookie Betts play baseball in a Boston uniform, because it's over in 2 years.
I was just kind of going through some of the signings of the past few years, and when you say Mookie isn't going to take like a 5-year deal at high annual value, I agree. I think there's a low percentage chance that that would happen, but if you go back a couple years ago, we didn't really think we would be in this situation. We thought last year's market was weird, you know, and this year's hot stove season is even weirder, and there's a lot more talent. So I just, you know, to try to forecast 2 years from now, it's it's, you know, who knows what twists and turns things are going to take. Here's just the last few years, though, some notable free agents. Now, there hasn't been a Harper, a Mookie, a Machado type guy, but it hasn't worked well for the few big signings there were. Jason Hayward, 8 years, $185 million roughly. Yoenis Cespedes, 5 years, $125 million. And there was a year before that he opted out, so it essentially became like a 6-year, $150 million deal. But that's not working out well. Edwin Encarnacion, 3 years, $60 million, so 20 per. That's not working out terribly, but you know it hasn't served as a game changer for Cleveland, and they can't seem to. They did, I guess they did trade him, didn't they? Isn't he in Seattle or no?
Yeah, he was traded to the Seattle in a deal, I think, back in November.
Okay, yeah. And there's been a lot of weird deals because they did some flipping, and somehow Santana went there from Philly but then went back to Cleveland. And so, like, that's just an example of probably a contract that was probably more than, at least by 2018 standards, that's probably an overpay, I would say. So we're seeing some of the bigger contracts not work out, and then the market shrinking. So I'm just trying to illustrate the weirdness that's been happening. Here's another scenario, and I'll just a disclaimer as we go into it. I think this is a long shot, but I think it should be talked about at least briefly. Could maybe Mookie, maybe, but especially JD Martinez be looking at the market right now and think, you know, maybe I will talk with the Red Sox about an extension here, because for Martinez especially, he's going to be 32 years old. So what's the value for a 32-year-old guy? I mean, Encarnacion rakes, you know. He's been a 3,100 guy for most of the past decade, and I don't know. I mean, if 3 years, $60 million is a lot for him, what's JD really going to be worth if he doesn't try to cash in right now before he really screws himself? Because we saw Yasmani Grandal, he screwed himself. He declined a 4-year, $60 million deal, and now he's got a 1-year, $18 million deal. And Jake Arrieta screwed himself last year. He had a 4-year, $110 million offer from the Cubs. That's roughly $27 million a year. He only ended up getting 3 years, $75 million from the Phillies. So we're seeing guys screw themselves, and I'm just wondering if the market might kind of make at least Martinez willing to talk.
Yeah. It means way more to Martinez because Mookie is better than Manny Machado, and he's better than Bryce Harper, and he's more marketable than both of them combined. So, like, Mookie Betts is, you know, recession-proof, you know what I mean? Like, you know, when you talk about, like, professions that are potentially recession-proof, like, Mookie Betts is recession-proof. He's above everybody. He might be above everybody. If there's anyone in that class, it's Trout, and we already know he's going to Philadelphia. JD's the guy that's watching this going, oh, fuck me. You know, I don't – and – here's what I think is going to happen, because I've heard Dombrowski talk on this topic, and I feel really strongly that the Red Sox would be willing to do this. They'll say, look, we're going to keep the term in place. We're going to add, let's say, $2.5 to $5 million per year on the deal, and that is going to be us purchasing away your right to opt out. That's what I think is going to happen. And I think if JD does that, I think he'd take it because – For a couple reasons. One, he's going to make a higher AAV, and he likes Boston. He's won a World Series here. And he leverages the fact that he was able to negotiate the opt-outs into more money, which is what he wants anyways. I don't think he wants to opt out. I think he wants more money from the Red Sox. And that's the perfect situation where, you know, that opt-out, you look, pay me $4 million for the two opt-outs. Add another $4 million on the last year of the deal. My AAV gets closer to, what is it, $25 million? And, you know, and you don't have to worry about me leaving. Like, if I'm the Red Sox, I do it right away. If I'm JD, I may not have done it before this offseason, but now I'm watching Manny Machado, who's a better all-around player because he's a good defensive player, and then Bryce Harper, who's definitely a better all-around player and definitely more marketable, and he's watching what's happening to them. And he's got to be looking at himself going, I'm a one side player. I'm an offensive player that can't run, and I'm good, and I'm a slugger, and I'm a middle of the back guy, but if these guys aren't getting anywhere near what they want, I'm even less than that. The Red Sox are already paying me and I like this city. Let's pay for those opt out years and let's stay in Boston. That's what I hope is going to happen. And if, you know, I think that's what's going to happen. I hope that's what's going to happen.
I'm with you on that one. You know, and I got the same level of skepticism as to whether he'll do it because his agent is Scott Boras. And, you know, Boras, you know, he can talk his clients into jumping off a bridge. They probably do it. Let's just quickly, though, go through his contract real quick. Made basically $24 million last year, just to make the math easy. Makes that again this coming year and then can opt out after it, which I'm assuming he would if an extension isn't worked out. He makes the same for 2020, but he would be a year older, you know, if he waited for the second opt-out year. He would be basically 33 at the start of the 2021 season, and then actually for 2021 he's only making $19 million and then $19 million the year after, which with this current market starting to sound pretty good, because I don't think if Edwin Encarnacion at 34 years old was a free agent this year, I don't think he gets that. So maybe he does. Maybe he does come to the table and says, you know, 5 years. Would you go 5 years, $30 million with no opt-outs? You said 25, but would $30 million a year break the bank?
So that would turn, after this year, it would turn it into a 4-year, $120 million deal, right? I'm sorry, 3-year, $90 million deal, whereas right now it's $65 million. That's a good question, Terrence.
Actually, it's a little higher. Let's see, 46 plus 40. So he'd have... 76 million. He currently has roughly 76 million on the books.
Well, I'm talking about he has to play 2019. He doesn't have an opt out. He's a Red Sox. So it goes to the last 3 years of the deal, 2020 at 23, let's call it 24 mil. And then he's got 2021 and 2022, and let's call it 20 mil. So it's a three, after this year, he has an opt out. Then he has an opt out after each of the remaining 2 years. So what are you willing to pay to get to that point where you know you're going to have the player? Because the current deal isn't going to do it. I mean, right? We can agree on that. Right. So let's call it $64 million, 3-year, $64 million. Would I do a 3-year, $90 million deal? I'll tell you what. If he goes through 2019 and he did what he did last year, yes, I would. Yep, 100%. Because remember, after next year, so the last 2 years of the deal – there's going to be no Mookie Betts in the middle of the lineup. So JD is going to be the lead dog. And you got to have him, because if you have no Mookie Betts and you have no JD Drew, you better hope Devers turns into a plus offensive player. You better hope Benintendi turns into a three hitter, which I think Benintendi will eventually be that good. But I mean, you already have the guy. And if it's just going to take an additional, let's say five to 10 million per year, keep him there. And then you can feel a little bit better about the fact that there's just no fucking way you're going to pay for Mookie Betts.
Okay, so just to be clear, it doesn't sound like you want to go beyond the current deal other than to give him raises for the existing years within the deal. So you wouldn't extend him?
Yeah, can I just hit on that quickly?
Sure.
All right. I like J.D. Martinez. I like his demeanor. I like his personality. I love his swing. I love the way he leads. I love a lot about J.D. Martinez. There's some things I don't like, though. He cannot play defense, and he doesn't want to be a full-time DH, which is a problem because he sucks at defense. The other problem I have is he's really unathletic. And I have concerns, despite the fact that he clearly takes really good care of himself. I have some concerns with his ability to keep his body in peak physical condition and be a 30-10 guy at age 35. And so for that reason, I'd much rather go to a $30 million annual average value than add years on the end of the deal.
The problem that I'm having is I don't know that – I think he would want a longer-term deal. I think that's what it would take to get him to sign early and not test free agency. You know, I'd like him to sign while he's with us, while we have all the leverage. And with the athleticism, I totally get that. But I think if he were to get a serious raise like we're talking about, I don't think he cares really that he would be a full-time DH. He's getting paid. He likes playing in Boston. He likes his current core teammates. And, I mean, I would be fine with him as a DH making that kind of money.
I don't have a problem with him being a DH either, but he made it very clear he doesn't want to be a DH. And there's also I heard some rumblings, and you're probably going to jump all over me if I'm wrong here, so I'm anticipating that there may even be some type of deal as part of his contract where he's promised defensive innings. Now, I don't know that, so I'll just leave it at that.
But I don't think there is.
Let me say one thing. If he is hell-bent on adding term to his contract, I would go to a year 35. I would go to his age 35 season. And I wouldn't even care if he's still productive at 35, if that means we get him productive for the next three seasons. It's what you have to do with these guys. You have to pay for years where you know they're not going to still be elite. It is what it is. That's what you have to do to get them. The teams that are looking at Harper and Machado are conducting the same analysis. I would add a year if it means you get to keep the player and you get out of this opt-out situation, because the opt-out situation scares the shit out of me, because I already told you Mookie's not coming back.
All right, let me just... one last time with the DH thing. The reason why he wants to play defense is because when the day he signed his name to that contract, his mind was already made up that he's opting out in 2 years, and he wants to play defense to keep his value high. And now if he's going to be considering an extension while he's already under team control, he's gravely concerned about the market, and I just don't – once he has his money, I just don't think he's going to care what he does as long as he's in the lineup every day. And with with the years left, I'm just – I'll do whatever it takes. I don't want to take him beyond his age 36 season. You know, that would be 2 years – on top of the current deal, but I would still do that over a 10-year deal for Mookie Betts. I'm a value guy, and shorter term, shorter money, you know, for a guy who can rake. And actually, I don't have his postseason numbers up here, but I know he did a little bit of damage in the Yankees series, JD did, and you know, and throughout the playoffs, and Mookie's a career 226 guy. in the month of October. So I just, the Mookie huggers will never agree with us, and you know, that's a battle we'll never win with that crowd. But JD to me is the better value.
Well, yeah, because Mookie, look, and after the collective bargaining situation is taken care of, I mean, is it impossible to say that in 4 years Mookie's not worth $40 million a year? I mean, it's not impossible, and you may disagree with that, and that's fine. So you're looking at a situation where, you know, JD may be worth half of Mookie Betts. I have zero interest in seeing JD Martinez signed beyond 2023, his age 35 season. The Red Sox have to be more careful about contracts for players that aren't productive. We just cleared Hanley. I think we have one more season of Panda. I mean, we've had a history of playing for players that just aren't even Red Sox anymore. Sometimes they're not even in baseball anymore. I'm cognizant, and so I take the analysis out of who's the better value between JD and Mookie. Look, JD's a good player. Mookie's a great player, maybe the best player. I don't need to see JD Martinez in a Red Sox uniform in his age 36 season unless it's a new deal, because he hit 23 bombs and 90 RBIs when he was 34 years old. At which case, if he wants to re-sign, like, then we know that he's taking care of his body, that he's still productive, and you can pay him at that point. You can give him a 2-year $30 million deal or 2-year $40 million deal. I have no problem with that. But let's not get crazy, and let's use what's happening with Machado and Keuchel and all these guys to our advantage, and let's be a little bit more fiscally responsible, because again, I harken back to the fact that we have a whole bunch of guys we got to sign. Benintendi he's got to get signed. I mean, we can't just let everyone go. Like, and let's assume JBJ leaves, you know, maybe that gives you a chance at Bogarts. You still got to sign some pitching, because Sale is unrestricted after this year, so is Porcello. You know, we have some concerns about, are we going to be competitive in 2 years if we don't find a way to keep some of these guys around? So, I also think JD wants more money. He does not want to opt out, in my opinion, but he's a smart enough guy. And I think he's, you know, got decent representation where they're going to go out and parlay that into some more money.
Yeah, I just don't think it would happen with that shorter years. I think he would just, going to free agency would be worth a gamble to him. Even if he only takes a 1-year deal at high annual value, just say there's no real multi-year, you know, market for him.
Why would he do that? He already has a real deal with the Red Sox. He's not going to opt out and sign a 1-year deal. If he's going to opt out, he's got to be thinking he's going to get a 4-year, $100 million deal. That's where his mind has to be.
Right, but once he opts out, he doesn't control the market. He has to opt out before he goes to free agency. So it's not up to him if he signs a 4-year deal. Once he opts out, he rolled the dice, and however it turns out after that's on him and Scott Boras. So if he's going to opt out at all, it has to be this year. It has to be while he's 32 years old, as opposed to 33 or 34, however long he wants to take this deal.
I agree with that. And and there's another thing that we've kind of discussed but haven't said, like, directly. His value is only in the American League.
True.
I mean, he has no value to a National League team after maybe then. And look, he did play some defense this year. Can I just say he sucks at catching fly balls? And he throws like his right arm's disabled. So he has almost no value as a two-way player. He's like zero. Like, his value is strictly related to his on-base percentage and his ability to slug. So half the league is a complete non-factor on him. Let's not overvalue that. And I know we don't want to lose him, but let's not overvalue what it's going to take to keep him. Because, again, half the league has no interest in him or shouldn't have. I mean, maybe there's a team that's just fucking stupid, but they shouldn't have an interest in him. You know, and I also do, and I truly believe this, I think J.D. Martinez likes Boston. I think he embraced the city, and I think he embraced what it means to play productively in the face of the Boston market. And we've told the story before, so I'm not going to tell it in any depth. But we are all aware that when he signed, Price said, "Get ready for this market," and his response was, you know, not negative. It wasn't catering to David Price. It was, "I'm excited. I want to be in this market." And I'm hopeful that that gives us at least a flip of a coin chance to buy out some of these opt-outs and buy them out at, you know, at the current term, or at 1 year.
Yeah, you're at 1 year. I'm at 2 years. So, I mean, we're a little off. But to me, the scary thing is not signing him or Mookie, you know, and so that's...
I totally agree. Totally agree. And that's why I think that you may have to overpay a little bit for JD.
And that's why I would do it. That's the point I was making. Here's another dynamic, though. To you and I, it makes perfect sense to not pursue Mookie. We've covered that for the last 15 minutes or so. But I'm not convinced that the Red Sox share that mindset. And here's an example. Dave Dombrowski signed Miguel Cabrera to what's looking like, maybe next to the Pujols signing, one of the most painful contracts of all time. That was like an 8-year, maybe even a 9 or 10 year deal with, added on to the money he was already owed, brought it up to like $292 million. He also signed Prince Fielder to a long-term deal that the Texas Rangers are still paying. Somehow he managed to flip him to Texas, got Ian Kinsler out of it, which must have been magic, because I can't believe, you know, I can't believe Texas allowed that to happen. But he signed some pretty stupid contracts fairly recently. So, and Mookie, whether we like it or not, I mean, 75% of the fan base might listen to this episode, or if they listen to it, would call us the most dumbest, irrational guys to ever consider moving on from Mookie Betts. So that's a lot for a GM to be the guy who didn't sign him. You know what I mean? So I hope they share our mindset, or I hope that they're at least open-minded to outside the box type scenarios, but I just...
Terry, can I have a conversation with the Boston Red Sox fan that hates us right now for agreeing that Mookie Betts isn't going to be a Red Sox?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sure. Dear Boston Red Sox fan, I'm going to assume that you're a fan of the New England Patriots. And one of the reasons why you love the New England Patriots is their ability to field a competitor year in and year out. And one of the reasons why they can field a competitor year in and year out is because they don't overpay for Randy Moss, who wasn't happy at $7 million. When he demanded $10 million, they said no, and we'll trade you, and we'll get assets back. When Jamie Collins became too expensive, we'll trade him to the Cleveland Browns, we'll get a left tackle and a defensive end out of it. When certain players become too expensive, we move on from them. Logan Mankins, I could go on and fuck Deion Branch, Wes Welker, Seymour. I literally just go on and on and on. You love that about your Boston Reds, about your New England Patriots. It's like a badge of honor. And I'm a Patriots fan. I'm a diehard Patriots fan. My dad was a season ticket holder. I even though I live in Florida, I still see the at least 3 Patriots games in person a year. I love it about them. I love that they're fiscally responsible. I love that they're not thinking about just this year. I love that they can build a winner and build a winner for 2 or 3 years out. And I mean, miraculously, it's been like 19 years now. You have to take your love of the Patriots and why you love them and why you respect the way they run their operation, and you have to apply it to this situation. You can't be competitive year in and year out if you are paying 1/8 of your available payroll to one player. You just can't. Now, I understand Mookie Betts is transcendental. Again, I just combined two good words into one non-word. But he's a transcendent player. That's a good word. I get it. He's maybe going to be the best player of this 25, 30-year block of period of time. I get it. But do you want to have the best player in the league, or do you want to win year in and year out? Because if you want to win year in and year out, Mookie's got to go. And I'm sorry to say it, because I was upset when Deion Branch left after they won that Super Bowl against the Panthers. And I was upset when Seymour left. But guess what? They were able to remain fiscally responsible, build balanced rosters, and win additional Super Bowls, go to eight straight AFC championship games. We're on the verge of potentially going to another Super Bowl, Brady's ninth Super Bowl on Sunday. You want that for the Boston Red Sox? I know you do. See, look at it that way, and I think we're going to get more people to understand that Mookie Betts can't be here unless he's going to take a really a hometown discount, and it's not going to happen because he's already turned that down.
I agree, and I don't know if that's a demographic we can ever really, you know, get, you know, to resonate with our logic, but I'll tell you what, though. I might be the 1% of Red Sox fans that'll enjoy this, but like the cry fest that would happen, you know, when that headline comes across the, you know, the Twitter screen or, you know, MLB trade rumors, wherever anyone goes for their news, you know, Mookie Betts signs with the Dodgers for whatever, and then Red Sox fans just freaking out. I don't know why I get enjoyment out of stuff like that, but
I don't either, and I you know, I don't want to get into like the type of fan you are versus the type of fan I am, but I'm at a complete loss for words that you that would create enjoyment for you.
I would laugh so hard. I would feel like we dodged the biggest bullet ever, and, you know, it would be great. All right, we're like way past where we should be. I just want to touch on this Machado thing real quick, or Harper thing. Harper had a meeting with the Philadelphia Phillies last Saturday. A lot of buzz from the meeting. Apparently, you know, there's been all these headlines. Harper's the front runner, you know, for the Phillies, blah, blah, blah. I'm not buying it. Here's why. Joe Jordan is the farm director for the Phillies. He drafted Manny Machado, third overall in 2010 for the Orioles. Current Phillies president Andy McPhail was the Orioles GM back then. His general manager right now, Matt Klentak, was McPhail's top assistant. Ned Rice, who is now McPhail's top assistant, also came from Baltimore. This is basically the 2010 Baltimore front office in Philadelphia, and any talk of them possibly signing Harper, I think, is just them putting the metaphorical gun to Machado's head saying, hey, buddy, you better sign now. You know, this is probably going to be the best deal you're offered. And if you don't take it, we might sign Harper. But I still think Manny Machado is their guy, is what I'm getting at.
I don't disagree. The only thing I'll say is I think there's going to be a team that jumps in late, which often happens with these superstars. I don't know exactly what team it'll be, and it may not happen. And I've speculated what, you know, in a fashion that, based on the information available today, seems wrong. Why haven't they signed? Why haven't they signed? And my answer to that is because I think they're waiting for something that may or may not be coming. So, that's kind of where I'm at with this situation. I think we've talked on this so long, and I've really come out and said a whole bunch of stuff about this. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, I don't want to bore you with saying the same thing over and over again, but I just think that there's going to be a team that jumps in late. And I think there's a team that's sitting in the weeds, and I think the players know that there's a team sitting out there. I don't know who the team is, but I think they're waiting to use the leverage of spring training starting as a final push to get every single dollar bill out of whatever contract is coming, whether it be from the Phillies, whether it be from the White Sox, or whatever team that we currently aren't, you know, necessarily privy to.
Yeah, and just a couple off the top of my head, I mean, the Cardinals, I mean, they were connected to Stanton, and they seem to always be in the conversation for some of the big free agents, so maybe that's one. The Padres are at least a year or two from competing, but they got the best farm system in Major League Baseball, and it seems like they're looking to start adding people, so that's potentially a landing spot. And I forget where I heard it today, but someone was trying to make a case for the Houston Astros signing Bryce Harper, so that would be interesting, but nothing really has come out that's really connected them. So, but those would be the top mystery teams, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the mystery team is going to be a team that doesn't have the farm system to build. And so, you know, if you don't have the farm system, what's the only way to build now? It's dollar bills. The Padres, to me, just seem to be a team that should wait and follow the Astros approach and wait for those assets to mature. And then you can have winning seasons without having high-end rosters. And now they're finding out what it's like for all that talent to kind of graduate, and they can't afford all of it. So, you know, for example, Keuchel will probably go elsewhere because, you know, they've kind of priced themselves out at certain roster spots. If you're a team that's real thin, you may be a player away, you may have an offensive situation where you're just missing some slugging and you don't have the assets to go out and improve otherwise, that's the team that may say, you know what, fuck this. Let's spend some money and get that player we think will get us into the playoffs. So, and I think you're in, you know, I don't disagree with the teams you've mentioned. I also don't rule out other teams, but I'm not going to do an itemized list.
Yeah, and I mean, both of those teams have the financial means to do it, given that their payroll, well, the Padres' payroll is down. I'm not sure where St. Louis stands, but I think they probably could add at least one player. Atlanta was another one that came to my mind late there that could potentially add, but anyway, we'll leave that, you know, for now, and maybe, I don't know if we'll do anything this weekend. Maybe, you know, worst case scenario, middle of next week, we'll record the next one, and maybe, just maybe, a domino or two will fall, and we'll kind of have an idea of how the rest of the hot stove season will play out. So,
well, we're inside a month, to that weekend where we play Boston College and Northeastern. So things are going to have to happen in the next 4 weeks. They just have to, and at which point you're risking not having a club at the start of spring training. And I would think that at that point, we'll be talking about various issues with players finally signing. And then, you know, once we get into camp, you know, injuries, player position battles, and we should really ramp up and start to have a lot more substantive discussions about the 2019 campaign. So really looking forward to it. It's so close. I can honestly, I just honestly cannot wait. And hopefully we have a team that's competitive, and I think we do.
Absolutely. And I guess we'll just end it on that note. So thanks for coming on, and we'll be in touch as the, you know, developments unfold.
Thanks, Terrence.
Have a good night, man. All right, another episode down, which means we are one less episode before spring training. So slowly but surely headed towards the next season. And I keep telling myself that, you know, we have it a little bit better because we got an extra month of baseball that no other team got. So their baseball fever in all the other markets must be pretty intense right now compared to ours. So on that note, everybody have a good Friday, Saturday, whenever you listen to this, and enjoy the AFC, NFC championships this weekend if you plan on watching them, and we'll be back next week. Take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou. For you to access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou. forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.